Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen, and every Tuesday and Thursdays, and as we have to say now, every now and again we have a special in between those days or after those days where we bring you an eclectic perspective on the topic of change. We talk about change on the individual level, even if you're in a massive social or community type environment, you, the individual, have to decide which way you're going or opt out for an alternative. Family dynamics, as we've seen, family dynamics totally change over the last 10 to 15 years. We now have to consider many other aspects of what family means, how it supports one another, and in terms of just helping, as we say, pushing people up. Business, whether you're employee or employer, you're part of a much bigger package. You are a family, to consider it in the broadest sense, and at the same time, bringing certain skills, competencies, and your interests. You know, we've been talking about Edward Deming and his work in Japan. We've spoken about some of the social, cultural, and religious embracing of these aspects in someone's working environment. All of this is to say that we're driving higher levels of engagement and more interactive, more human, which is going to be interesting because of tonight's discussion and guest, on how we engage one another. And of course, life perspectives itself. As we get to certain ages, what is your perspective on life? What do you see yourself doing in the future? Will you regurgitate the same perspectives as our parents and grandparents? Or will we forge new avenues into the future? Well, tonight's guest, Max Cordwell, he's the Global Manager Director for Willis Towers and Watson. He is certainly going to begin to address some of the new technology, and in some cases old technology, on how we begin to embrace employees and, of course, one another. Willis Towers Watson's HR software business combines cloud-based software, data, and analytics, and consulting to engage employees, manage talent, and improve business performance. Max has worked in the field for over 25 years, improving people and business performance through effective HR strategy, technology, and of course, change management. He has led Towers Watson's biannual global workforce study, which we will talk about tonight, the most extensive research of its kind on what drives the motivation and performance of employers around the world. Good evening, Max. How are you?
Ronald, I'm doing great. Thank you. You know, my mother wrote that bio, so thank you. You delivered it beautifully.
You know, Max, if you didn't start off like that, I would have said our previous conversation wasn't real. Wonderful. it is truly amazing how we do draw from our ancestry, and we can make it human and embrace our working environment. Let's talk about that a bit. You've been in the field the better part of 25 years. Can you tell us, let's start off with, what is this field of managing people through data?
Well, you know, it means a number of things. What's really striking over the past 10 years is just how much data, how much information we can gather from people and about people in every walk of life, not only inside, you know, companies, but certainly consumers and everything else. And what's exciting is that, you know, we've been able to better harness that data, interpret that data, and draw insight from that data to really inform what people are thinking, what they're feeling, how they will behave, and to be able to start to predict, not only predict behavior, but really if you're a company, for example, gain a better understanding of the kind of environment you need to create for people so they will be happy, they'll be healthy, they'll want to job for their customers, they'll grow, and they'll have all, you know, overall a very engaging, very satisfying experience. So we anchor a lot of the work that we do, not only in the science of change management and other disciplines within Willis Towers Watson, but also in interpreting these data to make better decisions. So I think the data revolution, in some respects, really kind of a human revolution in terms of the ability to help people have a better life and have a better work life.
It's been said that the CEO today has to have a much broader perspective of business, not just the balance sheet, income statement, not just the stakeholders' stock price perspectives, but to embrace things, and you alluded to it, behavioral science, anthropology of the makeup of their pool of employees, sociology, culture, nationality. Again, I'm going to keep it on the big picture a minute as we drive down to the specifics. What is your take on that perspective?
Well, Ronald, I think that's a really perceptive observation. I think it's right. And it comes from a few places. One, I think business leaders really in any walk of life, community leaders, religious leaders, I think have an understanding that, people and the talents they bring, the creativity they bring, are really critical to making any endeavor, any kind of organization successful. And so I think there's increased focus on saying, look, if our businesses are much more people dependent, I mean, even a technology business, even, you know, Apple, for example, you may think Apple is a technology company, but they're a people company. It's people who create the great technology, create the great innovations, understand how to bring things to market effectively. So I think you see CEOs really quite aware of that and realizing that they need to approach people performance and people engagement with a lot more focus and more intentionality. I also think that look at the world we're living in now where the ability to synthesize information, the ability to empathize, the ability to understand other people, the ability to be open to design thinking, to value what you might think of as those kind of right brain attributes, in addition to those left brain kind of attributes you think of being analytical and understanding the numbers and so on. It's a lot like, you know, a while ago, Dan Pink wrote a great book, A Whole New Mind, which talked a little bit about this idea that leaders in all walks of life need to develop this, as he called it, sort of right-directed way of thinking, opening themselves more to issues like human behavior, to expose themselves to other cultures. You know, another great example for me is, you know, organizations that are globalizing, and they are trying to operate effectively and, you know, many, many different cultures, understanding consumers, understanding employees. They need to have a real cultural adeptness to be able to land on their feet and decode a new culture around them and operate successfully in that context. And so, again, that has nothing to do really with just the spreadsheets and the numbers. I think that has a lot to do with how you operate in these very complex systems of people's behavior and various cultures.
You said a lot there, Max, and I was reading through, again, the material from your website, the white papers, and I came away with this question, which you did allude to, because you said we have to look at how the employee is engaging the CEO is engaging with those employees. And moreover, if we're not just looking at the bottom line, or maybe we need to look in a different way at the bottom line, ProSize, Tim Creasy says, what level of output depends on the employee's engagement and adoption of the new process. Instead of saying we're going to do a change management initiative or we're going to change things, so that the questioning, you're absolutely right, the questioning is absolutely crucial. It's really a matter of what level of dependency on that employee's engagement and adoption of the new process depends on the success of this project. So that brings me to a question that came up. Does this new data, does this new wealth of data, identifying behavior, tracking key characteristics of high performance, and as we discussed previously, developing incentives, adoption, and retention of the employee, does this, in some cases, hide or insulate management from the true ability to communicate with employees? Do they, in other words, does a middle manager or supervisor say, these are the requirements I have been passed down with, these are the specs, to coin a PMI phrase, you do, again, you know, that industrial mentality, you do it or you don't do it, and then we move you out. Is that what's possibly happening or could be read that could happen?
Yeah, boy, I hope that's not happening, and I hope it doesn't happen, because I think that would be a recipe for probably for frustration on everyone's part, probably failure on the part of that manager or that leader. And I think that's part of why we're seeing an evolution away from command and control types of management environments, focusing much more on distributed leadership. You know, I think there are a couple of angles. One, the environment you create inside any organization that we believe from our research is consistent with people being highly engaged speaks to a lot of things that aren't really that exotic, really, and I think they're very human in some respects. You know, people want to feel connected to their company. They want to feel proud of their company. They want to know that their leaders care about them, and they want to feel that someone notices them. They want to feel that their contributions are noticed. People want to have the tools they need to do a good job. So they want to feel that their technology, the processes they have, even their colleagues, that all those things combine to help them do the thing that they want to do. And by the way, our research also really indicates people come to work or go into any walk of life wanting to do a great job. No one shows up wanting to fail. Everybody shows up wanting to be successful. The third thing is people want to work in a healthy environment. They want to be physically and socially and psychologically well-adjusted and happy. So when you combine those factors, what we might call commitment or engagement, enablement as second, and sort of well-being or energy as that third piece, you then begin to talk about an environment within which people are enabled to be their best and do their best. And I personally have become a real convert to the concept of agility in the workplace, and I mean that in every respect, strategic agility, operational agility on the ground, and not just agility as we think of agile in the sense of technology, because what you're really saying is, look, if you give people the tools they need in a great environment and you equip them with the information they need, they're going to make great decisions for you. You don't have to tell them what to do. They're going to find that on their own, and teams are going to find their way. Teams are going to do the right thing because they want to do that. You're giving them the ability to do that versus, you know, telling people what to do. And I really think that that's really, really important as we think about the concept of change and what change and change management really means today.
We're talking with Max Cordwell. He is the Global Manager Director for Willis Towers Watson. And when we come back from our short break, we're going to ask a question: what are some of the disconnectors that Max just alluded to that are going on in the workplace? You're listening to Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen, and we're here every Tuesday and Thursday evening on Internet Blog Talk Radio. We also ask you to visit our social community, Managing Change 2, that is a numeric 2 at the end there, .com, and give us your thoughts. Engage, whether you create private or public forums and groups to discuss issues that are important and pertinent to you. You're listening to Managing Change. We'll be right back in a moment. Welcome back to Managing Change. I'm Alan, and tonight's guest, Max Cordwell. He is the Global Managing Director for a company that drives data, Willis Towers & Watson. Tonight's program, your people are only as good as the data that found them. Max, let's discuss some of those disconnectors that when employees come into the workforce, like you said, we are all motivated, we are all pumped up, we are have good intentions, and then all of a sudden, there's a disconnect. What's going on there?
You know, I think it's a few things. A bad manager can be a gigantic disconnector. In fact, one of the we found one of the single greatest factors in why an employee leaves a company is their direct manager. And, you know, a good manager, an attentive manager, a manager who thinks through the lens of engaging a team, has genuine conversations with people, shows genuine caring for them, you know, removes obstacles for them, helps them think about their own career, and cares about them, for lack of a better phrase, that's incredibly sticky. That's the glue, or one of the kinds of glue that hold people. And conversely, a manager that is the opposite of all those things can very quickly turn someone off. So I think that's a big one. We found that also stress and pressure in the workplace can be a really big one too. A lot of companies are trying to do more with less. They're stretching people. They're asking more of people. They're equipping them with wonderful mobile technology that, while fabulous and convenient, also means that, you know, we can never turn it off. You know, whether you're on vacation or it's the weekend, you know, you're connected. And so we find that sense of stress can also wear people down, and it can really be one of those disconnectors. And then finally, I think good communication and good conversation can be a wonderful connector or, conversely, disconnector. People want to understand what's going on. They want to understand not just what's going on, but what does it mean to them, and what are you asking them to do? How can they contribute? And, frankly, what's in it for them? And we find organizations that consistently communicate well, and that's from the CEO, you know, all the way on down. It's through social media. It's through a variety of different channels. Creating this kind of information-rich environment, we find that people have a much better work experience. It's much easier for them to find their way, to feel part of something. And it's, by the way, that also, that sense of community, that sense of belonging to something is also it's a very conceptual thought, but it's very important. The notion of being proud of my organization, I want to tell people who I work for, I want to tell people the not-for-profit that I do volunteer work with, whatever it might be, some of that comes out of, hey, I'm proud to be part of this organization. I want to belong to something. And I think that's a very basic human need, and it's one that can unlock tremendous engagement and tremendous creativity and performance.
Back to that sociology and behavioral science observation of need of serving, need of caring, giving back, helping other people. You spoke earlier, Max, of the term agility, and there was another report. There's so much you and I had initially discussed in terms of the type of work you do and the report that brought us together, the McKinsey report, which we're going to get into momentarily, which we've kind of been dabbling in. To your point earlier, you said companies have to be agile in terms of flexible in management style. There's also the whole concept of stability breeds agility, because there is a baseline, there is a foundation, there is a springboard off of which all employees, management, middle level, C-level, whatever division that's driving a service line or a business product production, they know what is supporting them, and therefore they can be agile. Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, you know, to me, it's a matter of defining, I think, Ronald, what that platform is. I think the paradigm of aligning people to a strategy platform that says, here's our three-year plan, here are our strategic imperatives, and we want you to get excited about that, connect to those things, I really think that's an empty approach, frankly, for a couple of reasons. One, whether you set a one-year strategy or two or three, often by the time you hit the end of that period, the strategy is obsolete anyway. You've had to respond to the changing market. You've had to change to different circumstances. I think it's much more powerful for people to connect to a purpose. So what is, why does my company exist? What is our purpose? And if your purpose, and I'll use what my business within Willis Towers Watson, we develop software, we deliver consulting services to our clients. We do a lot of things. And when I ask myself, why do we do that? What is the core mission and purpose behind that? You know, for us, it's making a difference in the lives of millions of employees around the world. It's making their lives better, making their workplace better. So I convey that to my people, whether you're building software, consulting on an employee survey, processing compensation information, whatever you might be doing, the end purpose is to make life really better for employees and companies, because that in turn helps those companies perform better, meaning our clients. So I think this idea of connecting to the purpose, and if you connect to the purpose, then you challenge people to say, push us, help us figure out how can we better accomplish that purpose. You know, yes, we will do it. We will do our best as leaders to put out there the things that we believe we need to focus on to get there. But that's an ongoing dialogue. That's an ongoing dialogue with the organization, with its people, where, and it's going to be a two-way street. You know, I think people in the front lines know a heck of a lot more about what we need to do sometimes to satisfy our customers or the stakeholders we serve. And if we let them do it, if we free them to do it, anchored in that purpose, I think they do amazing things. I think they do much more amazing things than any group of even the brightest senior leaders can do sitting in a room with a whiteboard and laptops. I really do.
To that point, Max, the phrase customer-facing employee feedback is one of those touch points in the life cycle of delivering the goods where instead of saying the head, granted it has the brain in it, but the head is the processor of the information that the feet and the tail and the wet nose feels of its environment. And I took that from my wife and I are animal lovers, and we've rescued crazy animals and we still have some. And I took that from that observation, because as you said, if that employee is interacting with the customer and the customer gives feedback, there should be a conduit that says, hey guys, brain, this is a tweak, or this is an iteration, or this is a request. The other day I was speaking with Apple about my Mac and moving from Windows to Mac. Sorry, Windows. And there was a touch point, and I said, you know, this would be great if you could, but the guy just kind of cut me off. No, I can't do that. So that's where I get this feedback from these programs and speaking to people like yourself, and then myself being out in the marketplace developing my consulting business. You have an interesting topic here, which talks about Willis Towers Watson has developed an integrated software suite to power talent analytics, assessment, development, performance management, and rewards. And in the McKinsey report, it talks about matching individuals, teams, and projects. Can you speak to that for us, please?
Yeah, one of the things that particularly professional service firms like McKinsey have done, but other organizations as well, is creating a mechanism, and this is where technology can be such a phenomenal catalyst and enabler of this, work really hard to try to encourage people to think about what is it that they want to do? Where do they want their own career to go? What skills do they need to acquire? And in a more immediate sense, in some firms, you know, what is it I want to work on next? So in a sense, you create a mechanism by which people can express their interest in things. It's not just, you know, posting for jobs, but you have this very flexible way of deploying your talent. It's almost like the analog of making a movie. You're saying, look, we have to get some work done. We really need to assemble the right talent, committed and interested, has the right skills. We'll draw something developmentally from that, and then we're going to do that work. And that's a very different paradigm than our typical, hierarchical kind of career paradigm, and it results in people, I think, being much better rounded, and it also results in much more efficient deployment of resources, by the way. So we think that finding a way to match people's interests and skills with the optimal utilization or deployment of those skills is really important. Again, that point that people are happiest when they feel that they are contributing to their maximum and that they're growing. And that's a great way to make that happen.
Let's talk a minute about the skill sets of the people that have to analyze the people that develop some of these programs. What is the makeup, and what have your observations been in terms of how do they think of this newfound wealth of knowledge or ability to look into competencies?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's the whole area of data science to me is one of those just unbelievably fast growing and important areas where I think it's almost like developing a different set of intellectual muscles, I suppose. It's individuals that understand the technology tools and how to use them in order to not just crunch numbers, but to derive insight that is a sort of statistically valid, that has integrity, that allows you to see patterns and then use that information to make better decisions, to focus your investments. And what's interesting about that is I think it's both, back to my earlier comment, both a left and a right brain exercise. It is. I think that ability to recognize patterns, to use a kind of understanding of behavioral science with a sort of statistical science, if you will, is important. A lot of people, for example, who are in our employee insights area that do various forms of employee research, PhDs in organization psychology, may have statistical backgrounds, but what they're really skilled at doing is understanding what to ask, how to ask it, and how to interpret the results in order to come back to an organization to say, here's what we think the issues are, here's where we think strengths, here's where we think you got some opportunities to improve, and equally importantly, here's what you need to do about it, and here's how we're going to help you begin to tackle those things. Because otherwise, data and insight that's not acted upon is sort of worthless. It's not really being converted into values. So I think that this whole area of data science is critical, but I do think it's merging into what we would think of as the traditional areas of change management, organization development, in some pretty exciting ways, and it's all aiming at the same thing, which is how do we create better environments for people, how do we improve people's performance, and how do we ultimately support the purpose of the organization and create a better customer experience and create greater financial value. So I think that I think these two disciplines are going to be intertwined, I think, very closely.
We're speaking with Max Cordwell. Your people are only as good as the data that found them. He is the General Global Managing Director for Willis Towers & Watson, and we're talking today on Managing Change about the people are only as good as the data that you found them. We're going to propose the question, does this mean that data, big data, is driving possible new creations in terms of personality profiles? The one that I love the most, Briggs-Myers. Why? Because it's a mother-daughter team that created what is fundamentally today one of the broadest used personal styling mechanisms. And yet it was created at a time, its infancy, when women did not even have a voice. They were not even considered economic units in the marketplace. I love my economics. So we're going to be right back after this short break. We're speaking with Max Cordwell. How are you managing your people? How are you engaging your employees? More importantly, how are you sending the message to the multiple levels? you have people, you whisper something in one person's ear, dog, and by the time it gets around to the next person, they could be talking about socks. You're listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Ronald Allen, and we are talking everything change.
Why do I listen to Managing Change with Ronald Allen and guests on blogtalkradio.com? Because I get to hear somebody else tell their story that relates to me. Issues, changes, and accomplishments that affect my life. Whether you're experiencing a career change, going through a family discussion about change, or an entrepreneur navigating the changes in your industry, Ronald's guests share their stories about winning. They bring solutions to bear on your issues. They get me answers to today's challenges in life. That's why I listen. Blogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change in Managing Life's Changes.
And we certainly are talking about change. We have some great guests coming up in the very near future. Dr. Renee Galloway out of the Pennsylvania University. We also have a great team. Again, you know, we're part of the New Jersey Jobs for New Jersey Network, and we're supporting their outreach in education, outreach to build relationships, partnerships with the educational world and the corporate world, and most importantly, bringing businesses to the table that are seeking skills that right now the employee market, that market, doesn't have. And they're pulling these three really complementary environments together to create the curriculum, deliver the training, and then produce an employee that is immediately valued in the marketplace. Well, we value Max Cordwell. He is the Global Managing Director over at Willis Towers & Watson. And we're talking about your people are only as good as the data that found them. Max, your last comments had me thinking, does that mean data science, and I guess I'll start off with a smaller question. Is it just a science or is it a combination, science and art?
Oh, I think it's science and art. I think that there's a science to how you collect, synthesize, and analyze, and interpret data correctly, or by correctly meaning in a statistically valid way, and how you would compare something to normative data, and there's nuance in that, but I think the science there's important. I think the art really comes from not losing sight that we're talking about human beings and we're talking about very complex systems sometimes in terms of how cultures, in terms of, what drives, what motivates people, what drives their behavior. And I think more interestingly, what predicts people's success? I mean, if you talk about leaders, we do work. We acquired a great firm about 6 months ago called Savile Consulting in the UK, and they are one of the leading assessment firms out there, both pre-employment assessments and leadership assessments and so on. And, they bring just an enormous amount of insight into what will predict whether it's a candidate or whether it's an outside candidate or whether it's an individual that you're assessing for potential promotion to a particular role, what predicts their success? What are the attributes and characteristics that would not guarantee success, but that would be consistent with success? And that I think is very important. And then I think there's an artfulness to how you apply that, an artfulness to how you sort of what you do with those data, and how you connect with people, and how you then develop individuals and develop their skills and competencies, and how you coach them, and how you lead people through difficult transitions, inside companies. So that's why I think there's definitely an art and a science. Without art, I think the data and the science becomes dry and often not ultimately useful, and the other way around, you can just make you could just not be focusing on the right things. You know, you could have great intentions, but just be sort of hunting in the wrong place.
Do you think it's going to drive new models of personality profiles? Would it drive deeper insight in these areas that we currently have?
I think it absolutely will, and I'll give you an example. I mean, you see, you know, talent acquisition technologies that a lot of companies are using that are becoming, they're not just using a kind of academic model to assess and predict the fit of an individual with a particular job. I mean, they're gleaning data from, you know, from individuals and trying to understand what is it about their experience, what is it about their competencies and technical skills, what is it about their personality and outlook that's helping them be successful in a certain context. And I think that the more, this is the exciting part, I think the more data we have and the more intelligently we deploy that data, the deeper our understanding will be. And I think that that's in the interest of organizations. I also think it's in the interest of people because no one's unhappier to be in a job that isn't a great fit than the person who's in it. So I think it's a win-win. It's absolutely a win-win. The other thing, though, I think that's important, maybe this is a bit of the art, is there isn't just one profile of a successful leader. There isn't just one profile of a successful manager or a successful employee. Often their success is contingent on the situation and the context that they're moving into. And I think that's where there's also an additional level of, there's some nuance there and some judgment. You know, what kind of leader is going to be great at going into a new country and trying to turn around a failing business? What kind of leader is going to be great at taking a mature business and instilling innovation in that business? What kind of leader is going to be able to, you know, operate in a digital environment, really be able to bring that kind of value to the market? You know, there might be some commonality of core attributes there for successful leaders, but I think there's also a lot of differences. And it's a matter of selecting people who are fit for purpose, and really that idea of fitting or matching people to the right opportunities.
Max, you bring me to probably my biggest question. I wrote this down after our initial conversation because it smacks of when employees say there's either nepotism, favoritism, there are little fiefdoms in corporations. Of course, in any initiative where there's a new process, a new management comes in. So the question, and help me out as I walk through it in terms of your response. When we talk about company, been around, and let's just say 50 years, not the 100, 200-year companies, but there's still quite a few out there, but let's say 50 years, and the HR culture, corporate culture, the management style is pretty much embedded. How are change managers and companies like yourselves that are showing that the data requires a change, the company would be beneficially changed. Stockholders would be very happy. Cut to the chase. Yet there is still in the rank and file sarcastic expressions of, well, these people don't speak English. Let's put that one in front, because that is a big challenge with these multi global corporations where they bring people in, and we do a segment about immigration and visas and high talent employees. This pushback, how is that addressed? How does a company begin to address the age of a company, the new employee from different cultures, different nationalities, playing significant roles in the company's operations, and the existing population that is now directly impacted and has to really change its behavior in how it interacts with the whole organization?
Yeah. Well, first of all, if I can discover the answer to that question, I'm going to quit my job and write a book and make millions, and then I'll be on your show every week. But it's a great question. I have one response, and then I'll tell you a very brief anecdote. The response is, look, there's transformational change and there's more transactional change. I think that transactional change that's more limited and more controllable, that can happen probably inside cultures where leaders may not be fully aligned and you have some of the dysfunction you described. But I believe, my experience, that if you're talking about transformational change, you've got to have three things in place. One is you need to have a burning platform and a burning reason for that change to happen. That, by the way, is a challenge for really successful companies trying to be even better because they often lack that. So, but if a company's in financial trouble or their margins are down or their market share is shrinking, whatever it might be, that burning platform really does focus the mind, and I think that creates the impetus for transformational change. Two, you have to have a commitment to real change at the top because, the single greatest shaper of culture are leaders. And now, having shaped it, culture can be a very, very challenging thing to unembed, but leaders can do it, and they can do it relatively quickly if the very top of the house and the more senior leaders all the way down really begin to subscribe to a certain set of values and behaviors, and they find very visible ways to symbolize to people and make real for people how they organizationally wish to behave. And when that's a big change, it's turning the big ship around. You got to change it. You got to do that from the bridge. You can't have people kind of paddling their way on the side. You've got to have senior leadership on board. If they're not on board, I think the odds of executing that transformational change are very, very low. I think third, you need to have a plan. You need to have intentionality to how you do it. You need to understand the mechanism of organizational change and the mechanisms of human behavior so that you can be very clever and artful about how you go about translating that a culture change agenda, an operational change agenda, into really different ways of working, very different expectations, and I think you need to pull all the right levers to make it happen. So when you have that burning platform, you have leadership aligned, and you have the system and the plan, I really think those are three things you need. That doesn't mean it's easy. I mean, it's easy to say it. It's very, very, very hard to do it because it's a very messy process, and it is fraught, as you know, with road bumps and you hit a landmine now and then, you take two steps forward and one step back. You've got to be very, very resilient, and you've got to keep doing quite a lot to keep that energy going toward positive change and keep encouraging people to make that change. But I'll just say one other quick thing. We in my business, we launched a large operations center in the Philippines a few years ago. We now have about 500 people there. And initially, there was quite a lot of resistance from some of the people in my business who were in the U.S. or in Europe or other parts of Asia about working with the idea of a center like that. And what we did, and I felt very strongly about this, is I would say to people, these are colleagues who just happen to sit in another place. This isn't offshoring. This isn't something you're going to throw work over the fence to them. They're not second-class citizens. These are fully-fledged, Willis Towers Watson Associates. They just happen to be sitting in Manila. And we just hammered that home. And guess what? What began to happen is people began talking to each other, and they began developing relationships. And then suddenly, and this is largely virtual, incidentally. These were kind of telephonic relationships and email types of relationships. And we found that those one thread at a time, suddenly all those threads added up, and we just had immense connection now between all of our offices around the world and the center that we have in the Philippines. Those connections, those threads, that respect that we said is an absolute necessity, has actually helped the people outside Manila feel very good and engaged. And it's made the people in Manila feel very good and engaged. And it's been an absolutely wonderful experience. But you have to overcome people's assumptions. You have to challenge them a bit. You have to really work at building some of those personal connections.
Max Cordwell of Willis Towers and Watson. Last question, Max, because I know you have to leave a little early tonight. When you're dealing with these large corporations, and we know who they are, I'm not going to throw out any names, and there is a somewhat a disconnect from the employees and what is publicly said. And I'm kind of addressing a piece of technology that your company provides. Technology hubs that seamlessly connect employees to HR data and services. My understanding of that is that you're helping the employee either through EAP programs, distance support mechanisms, learning platforms, skill development, safety services that are required based on the industry. Can you give us some examples of how you have helped the companies begin to address those disconnects?
Well, you know, this is where I think technology can be hugely helpful. I mean, one of the things that we've done with what we call our HR Portals offering is really create a technology home, a technology housing that makes it very easy for people and very intuitive for people to access information they need, to access data they need, in some cases to provide input to the company. And especially as so many more people are working virtually and so many more people want to access information on a mobile device in today's world, you know, creating that very simple portal or bridge between the individual and all the information and all the different things a company is offering and wants to share is really important. And we've done this with lots of organizations, and the particular configuration of that solution is different in different companies. But we find that to be very, very powerful. I think where organizations struggle, and this isn't so much about this concept of a portal, I think where organizations struggle a little bit is things like, how do we use social tools inside organizations? You know, do we want to create a closed ecosystem of social for the purpose of knowledge sharing and people building communities and so on? How do we deal with LinkedIn? How do we deal with other, you know, external social networking, tools and applications? How do we manage confidentiality and data privacy? How do we curate those so that people aren't being inappropriate, aren't communicating, interacting in ways with at least within the company ecosystem that aren't consistent with a code of values? You know, so those are big questions. I think companies are still grappling with how to harness some tools like social, how to create a very open communication environment, but recognize that there are differences in the way companies and different responsibilities that companies have and how they do that, perhaps, than how broad open communication and networking systems work.
And Max, how can someone reach out to you and see whether your services are a match for their needs?
Well, I would shoot me an email at max.caldwell@willistowerswatson.com. That would be the fastest way. I would be very happy to answer any questions, very happy to share any of the research that we have, any of the information that we have. And I'm always happy, very happy to learn from others' experiences. So happy to do that. And Ronald, very, very happy to have had the opportunity to talk with you. It's been really great.
Thank you very much, Max. A very complicated, very deep topic, to be sure, because it engages all our sciences and arts disciplines. Max Cordwell, he is the global head of HR software for Willis Towers and Watson. Thank you, Max, for your time, and we'll be in touch. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Ronald.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change Internet Blog Talk Radio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.